My name is Imad Alashi. I work for DeFi. And today, we are going to talk about how the ASP.NET 5 is cloud ready. But before we do that, let's just look a little bit and think what makes the cloud what it is right now. There are so many things, but there are several characteristics I'm going to concentrate on today that we'll have to see how the ASP.NET 5 tackled these areas. The first one is scalability. I'm going to concentrate on four. The first one is scalability. Before we had the cloud, we had web applications, just like any time we were before the cloud. In order for us to scale and serve so many requests in a time, we had to pump our servers. We have single server, single database maybe. We run the web application and see how many requests it's serving. If it seems that it needs more capacity, we bump it vertically or we just add hardware. And then the next level is to scale according or across multiple servers. Doing this would require from us to know a lot about the environment we have. We had to know the exact servers' names, where they reside, their configurations, their patches, everything about these servers, and the load balancer sitting in front of them, how it's configured. All of this we had to do, the server hardware and software-wise, know exactly how this is configured. When the cloud came, it built this huge abstraction. We don't deal with this stuff anymore. Scalability in the cloud means a knob. But of course, there's details that we have to make it happen smoothly, but it's a knob on your portal where you just drag it up, and instantly you are scaling your servers or your web application on different machines. This is one of the most important things about the cloud. The second thing is configurability. Also, the cloud opened our eyes on how we configure things. We also needed to know so much about the server and also our web application we had in our code. We had the configuration of the server with our code. With the cloud, now we are thinking of configurability something as a breeze. It's something that can be easily managed. It can be scripted. It can be remotely accessed through APIs maybe. It changed how we are perceiving configurations. It changed how we are dealing with configurations. Third, resources. Also, before the cloud, the cost, or the biggest cost that we would have to think about is the hardware cost. We would buy a server or a rack, and then instantly our cost jumps from zero to probably tens of thousands. If we need more, another jumps tens of thousands. And from zero to that number, it does not matter anymore as long as our utilization does not reach the maximum capacity. And this is how we are thinking all the time. This is the cost that we are incurring in ourselves. But with the cloud, it's different. With the cloud, our concentration is on our resources consumption. We rent CPU cycles. We rent memory usage. So it's not anymore about just paying this one cost at a time and then thinking about the performance. Performance is something that we have to think all the time. This is not a bad thing. This is absolutely not a bad thing. Because I don't have to pay tens of thousands of dollars ahead of time. I just can run my web application and see it how much it's it's consuming of resources and pay only of what I use. The last thing is diversity and being platform agnostic. Also, the traditional way of how we used to create web applications, single database, web application or web server running a web application, serving the request to this system. But then the requirements of the end users and the system started becoming more different, especially that with the power that we are having, the demands that we are having as social concerns and requirements and like serving so many end users. So this architecture stopped working anymore. You have to think even more. You have to think, we are now throwing things like service bus and message queues and different servers that are doing different roles in your system. And we are emerging into this microservices world where things can run differently on different platforms. Now it's not about a single platform. Your system, your whole application can run on so many platforms and divergent or different operating systems. So these four things, scalability, configurability, resources, and diversity, these four things are the main characteristics when we think about the cloud. So, how is this cloud ready? How did the ASP.NET team created the ASP.NET 5 to be cloud ready? And do you know why I put this picture? Because it comes with a template. I tried to think of so many pictures on how this is going to be expressed, but yeah, this is what I got. Well, the big news is that they built it from scratch. How many of you was in a situation where they were reconsidering building something from scratch? You have a system and you are considering building it from scratch again. How difficult was this? It's huge, isn't it? Probably you thought it about so many times, committees thinking how the pros and cons, and it's not an easy thing, but yet the ASP.NET team decided that we have been building this big, beautiful architecture for the ASP.NET for the last 15 years, and it was serving its purpose. But now with these things that we just mentioned, the world is changing, and in order for us to build something that accommodates these changes, we have to build something from scratch. And I really, really think this is a brave, really brave decision. Some people might have different like feelings regarding rewriting from scratch, but in this scenario, it makes a lot of sense. The only thing it needs is bravery, and we can talk about this in the questions if you have any questions about the backward compatibility. So building from scratch, they could look into things from a very different point of view. And the first thing they looked at was how they used to do caching. When we started talking about how the cloud work and the main characteristics of the cloud, we said scalability. And the biggest thing and the most important thing when you want to think about scaling is you don't want to bind your requests to a single machine. The minute you lock yourself, a request comes to a specific machine, something like using a memory in a server, your future requests cannot be directed to another server. You lose the ability to serve a request to another server that is capable of serving. In addition to duplicates of caching cached objects in the different servers, and with all of the cost that bringing up these objects in memory in the first place. So the first thing they thought of was introducing something called the distributed cache support. from day one, ASP.NET 5 supports distributed cache through this interface. Let's see demos instantly. We like demos, don't we? Down. This is interesting. Wow. I can't see the So what I'm going to do, I'm going to create a web application, blank web application. And this is one of the things that we're going to come across later in the presentation. When you create a web application in ASP.NET 5, you don't get any of the cost that you used to pay in the old web applications. There's no system.web. This big DLL that loads a lot of things in memory when request comes, it does not exist anymore. In ASP.NET 5, it's when you create a blank application, it's literally blank. So if I go ahead and create empty web application, I'm not going to use any of the templates. Say OK. We have this web application. If you examine the startup class, you'll see that it only have simple purpose. There's only one middleware in this web application, and its only purpose is to write on the response, hello world. So if I run this, very simple. Is anyone familiar with the startup class? How many of you have come across this startup class? Okay, a few. In ASP.NET 5, this started even before ASP.NET 5. They were preparing this modularity. There's something called OWIN. Maybe if I just try to open a website for you here. I think Open Web Interface for .NET. This is a specification that is community driven. It's not owned by Microsoft, but Microsoft contributes to it. They in this specification, they explain how a web server should act. And it just says that your web server should be a mere pipeline in which you define middlewares. You say, I want to use a middleware that have specific functionality. It can intercept the request, inspect the elements in it, do some changes on the response, and then let it go through to the next middleware. And the next middleware does the same. Until there's no middlewares at the end, then the response comes back to the end. And this is what we have here in our startup class. You can see in the configuration in the startup class, this is where you define your middlewares. And this is, we can see that this is an implicit middleware. This is why it's called, it have the run method. And it's just simply writes on the response. It's very, very, very light web application. There's no sessions, there's no modules, nothing, empty. All right, so in this web application, I just want to show you how the distributed cache functionality is supported from day one. So we are going to create a cache object and give it some keys and read these keys again from the cache. For this, we are going to. I'm going to use this snippet. I created it before. If you look into the code, this is a middleware. When I say use, this means I'm adding a middleware. It's just also inline middleware. So the first one is going to run this one, and then it's going to run this one. So if you look into this, you have access to the context. Also, I can't explain so many things like this is part of Owen specifications. I'm going to try to touch on it, but there's no space for explaining everything. Context here is very similar to the concept of HTTP context. It's the context where the, that defines the characteristics of the request and the response. You can have you can access the request object and the response object from the context and inspect them and change them. In the new ASP.NET 5, they also built a native support for IOC. Who is familiar with IOC? Beautiful. More hands. In ASP.NET 5, IOC is supported natively from the beginning of your application or the whole system. There's single container concept that can be used in your application. And through this container, you can instantiate your objects. So you define your dependencies. For example, your class depends on an interface X, and you can say in your application, you say, for any class that depends on interface IX, take the implementation from X class. We're going to come across this in a minute. The application services is a property in which the IOC containers, the IOC container exists. Simply, I ask the IOC container to give me an implementation of the iDistributed cache, which is the cache objects I'm going to use to connect to the cache server and put my key in and retrieve it again. I'm going to connect with the cache, save the message, because the distributed cache takes the objects as bytes rather than strings, because you can store images. So we have to encode it. And then we are going to set it and then get it again. But you can see that we have not told our application which implementation we need for this iDistributed cache. For this demo, I decided to use the Redis cache. Anyone familiar with the Redis cache? OK. Redis cache is just a server that stores key value pairs. It's distributed, and it's very fast. And this is the scenarios in which you would want to use Redis. But before adding this, let me just show you something interesting. In ASP.NET 5, where you don't have csproj, this big XML file that you have all these links to the files that exist in your solution, it does not exist anymore. Instead, they put something called project.json. It's a JSON format file in which you can put certain stuff. One of them is the dependencies. In this JSON file, you can define all the dependencies of the NuGet packages your application will depend on. And this brings us to another thing. Also, NuGet packages. Who is familiar with NuGet? Ah, beautiful. Very happy today. NuGet, for the hands that weren't raised, it's a way to have your dependencies and DLLs put somewhere where you can access them with different versions and include them in your system. ASP.NET 5 totally depends on NuGet packages. There's no DLL references. If you are targeting the .NET Core, which I'm going to explain in a minute, there's no DLL references at all. It's all NuGet packages. But if you access the full .NET framework, you can have some access dependencies on DLLs. So here, I'm going to say I have a new dependency. And you can see here a list of all the NuGet packages that reside on my NuGet sources I have defined, which is NuGet.org for this instance. So if I start typing, you can see that it's giving me IntelliSense. This is all the NuGet packages that are available that start with the word Microsoft, which is really interesting. Microsoft framework caching, and I'm going to use the Redis one, which is beta 8. And you can see also the IntelliSense figured out the NuGet package and all the versions that are available. Now, keep your eye here. Check this out. I'm going to save this project JSON, and instantly you'll see that it's restoring the NuGet packages. You can see here that the Visual Studio figured out that I have a dependency on a NuGet package for Redis. It pulled the NuGet package from the server and installed it as a reference for myself here. You can see it here. Everybody's following me until now? Good. If you are not following, maybe we can, it's like we said, I don't want you to be nodding. If you don't understand something or you object on something, just raise your hand. Let's make it conversational. Another thing I want to bring your attention to, probably you have attended the session yesterday about vNext. And probably that you know that part of the delivery of this new features of ASP.NET 5, there's something called the .NET Core. The .NET Core is a small framework that is cross-platform, which is something new also. ASP.NET 5 can run on this .NET Core, and also it can run on the full version or the full .NET framework. If your application have certain dependencies on functionalities that might not be supported by either of these frameworks, you can specify it here. In this guy, frameworks, the DNX 451 and the DNX for Core 50. In my case, the Redis NuGet package has some dependencies on which, or that does not support the .NET Core yet, because it's fairly new. Of course, we are going to see some more support for the new .NET framework core. But for the time being, there's not so many support for it. In that case, I'm going to just delete this, and I'm going to say, well, in my application, I don't really need to run it on .NET Core. And you can see this squiggle line that was there is removed. Another thing I want to bring your attention to is the Redis NuGet package also has dependencies on other NuGet packages. All of these as well were retrieved once you define that you need this Redis NuGet package. All of the dependencies the Redis NuGet package depend on are also retrieved. And it's retrieved in a hierarchical way so it does not pollute your solution. One of these dependencies is the caching abstractions. In this NuGet package, we have the iDistributed Cache interface, which defines how the distributed cache should behave. So if I go back to my startup, and I try to say using Microsoft Framework Caching Distributed, which is in that NuGet package, everything is fine. Or okay. Now my application understands that I need an implementation of iDistributed cache. But this is not enough. We added the reference, but in my configuration, I should tell my application which implementation it should use for the iDistributed cache. So if I go in the configure services, I would say I'm going to add first my snippet. And we'll call it here. Okay. Another thing. In order to understand what this configure services is, we have to understand how the IOC built in ASP.NET 5 is supported. When the application starts with at the very beginning of the ASP.NET 5 booting up your application in the hosting part of the ASP.NET 5, it looks for this startup class and it looks for a method called configure services, which we are in right now. It gives all a collection of services which is simply matching an interface to its implementation. So for example, if I want a specific implementation for the iDistributed cache in our case, this guy, I am telling through the services that I want to add an implementation for the iDistributed cache, and the implementation should be Redis cache. This guy, if I go to the definition of this class, I can see that it will implement the iDistributed cache. When you add this definition, when you define this relation, you can tell the nature of this implementation. So in this case, we are using Singleton. So we are telling the IOC container that whenever I ask for an instance of iDistributed cache, give me an object of type Redis cache and make it a singleton. So every time I ask for this implemented instance, I'm going to get the same instance throughout my application. If there's also different states, there's the singleton and there's transient. Transient means give me a new instance every time. And there is scoped. Scoped means single instance for the whole single request. I added my implementation. This is what I'm configuring that I want to connect to a local host of Redis, and the instance name is sample instance. Okay. So what is missing right now? If I want to run this, if it fails, why? Sorry? Yeah. There's no server running. So let's run the server. So I'm going to say Redis server. Why is it upset? Okay, I'm going to close you. Open you again. Redis server. Beautiful. Our server is running. I'm going to open another console. The ConyMew is just a fancy console, so don't be freaked out by that. I'm going to say Redis CLI. Now I'm running a client of Redis. I'm going to say keys star And you can see, oh, we ran the application. It seems that we ran it before. All right, I'm going to come back to this. So if I say, for example, a flush all, I think it was, and then keys again, keys star, yes, I have empty list. Now we have defined that we need an implementation of iDistributed cache of Redis cache. We configured the connection to be to localhost with a sample instance. And then if I run my application, you can see that in the hello world, if I go back to Redis here and say keys star, you can see that this key is created for me. So it was a very, very simple scenario. I just added a reference to the NuGet package, and instantly I'm running a distributed cache. The nice thing is the ASP.NET 5 also is very modular, and you really don't have any implementation of anything except for the things that you have defined. So in my web application here, there's no MVC, there's no web API, and there is even not no sessions. It's everything that you need, you will have to explicitly say, I need it. So let's add a support for a session. But we also don't want our web application to be specific to memory, correct? Session, as we know it, is stored in memory. And we don't want to bind our caching or the session objects, we bind it to an instance of a memory, because if we have a request that comes in, then we have to configure something called sticky sessions. Sticky sessions means that if a request comes in and it has already a session that is bound to it, it's going to hit on the same server that it came from or came to the first time. So even if you have two servers, and you have one that is really busy and one that is not busy, the request will not be balanced to the free server, but it's going to go to the same server it was serving before, because the session is in that memory. So we need to add session for our application, but we don't want to depend on the memory. And this is one of the nice things. All what we need to do is go to our project JSON. And say Microsoft ASP.NET this time session and beta 8. Now my application has the reference to the session NuGet package. So if I say if I go here and I say app.useSession, then I'm telling my application, put a middleware, make it the first in my pipeline request that handles a session, figuring out the cookie, creating the session object, handling the session keys for this request. All of this is becoming a new middleware that I have added to the pipeline. So my pipeline now consists of very simple four middlewares. One for the session, one for the Redis, one for the IIS, I'm gonna come back to this later, and the Hello World middleware. Very, very simple. So I'm telling now that use this middleware, but I also have to define the interfaces and implementations for the sessions. For this NuGet package, it also have extension methods for this services collection that says add session. So I don't have to create something like I did for Redis. The nice thing also, or if you have noticed that, I haven't told the session anything about where it should store the data. Who can guess from talking about IOC and adding services and stuff? Exactly. Beautiful. Session, in the NuGet package session in the DLLs, the session constructor depends on a dependency of I-distributed cache. So the session code, the DLL, asks for the IOC container in my hoster, give me an implementation for I-distributed cache so I can store my objects in it. So whatever you have defined to use I-distributed cache here, it will be the store for the session. So if I go in my inline middleware here, and I say session, now current context, dot session, dot sit. Sometimes it just freaks out like this. Sorry? Context dot session. It also freaks sometimes. Set string, I think. Key value. If I put a breakpoint here and run my application and see how things go. F10, let the request pass by, and then if I go to my console here and I say keys star, you see nothing. Let the request pass by and hopefully things will go fine. So I'm gonna say again, keys star, and you can see. You can see that, of course, the name of the key is ugly. You have sample instance, and then a GUID for the session ID. But this is how easy it is to be able to run different things on different implementation according to your likings. There's for this I-distributed cache, there's memory cache that is distributed, but it's not like, don't hold fast to the concept of distributed. This is best for scenarios like unit testing. There's a new implementation for SQL. I'm not sure why we would use distributed cache with SQL, but I think this is also to have an option for storing your sessions in SQL. If we flip back, so this is for caching, and this touch bases on the scalability of your application. Now you can, from day one, build your web application easily scalable. And when you hold that knob on the portal and you say scale, you don't have so much worries about your application. Configuration. In the web, in the ASP.NET heritage, the configuration had several issues that made it a little bit hard. It's complex. It's a lot of config files depending on the different environments, and the biggest of all, your configuration is part of the code. So if we look into how ASP.NET 5 looked into this. We have multiple sources. Before we touch on this multiple sources, for you, if you have a code that is running, where should the configuration run or reside for configuring your application? Is it in the code or the environment in which the code is running on? In your application, you just define the keys. You say, whenever I run, I need these keys of these types. And whenever I run, whoever runs me, make sure that you have these values. ASP.NET 5, for the configuration, you can define multiple sources. So you can say, try to get my values for the configuration from a file called config.json. But if you have environment variable with the same key, take the value from the environment variable. And you can define these sources in your configuration in the startup class, like I'm going to show you in a minute, so you don't have a problem with knowing the keys of your environments in your code. So you can have multiple sources. Another characteristic of the new configuration is the concept of environments. To be frank, I'm not supportive to this concept, but there are some scenarios in which it is needed. In the new configuration, when your application runs, you can say hosting or the running environment, the app environment, you can know if you are in a specific environment. So if you are in development, you can say, am I in development or am I in staging or am I in production? And depending on that, you can define different behaviors. Usually, you don't want your code to know about the environments, but in certain scenarios, it makes sense, especially if you are in your HTML Razor view and you want to have specific resources, you don't want to access specific references like CDNs or whatever in your development environment, but you want to only use it when you are in production. So in this space, it makes sense. And the last characteristic is it's out of build. In order for us to deploy a web application to an environment, or production, make it, or staging, in the way we have been doing this for the last 15 years, we had to define the environment in our code. We used to have config transformations. And we used to go, for this build, I want to choose staging environment and build. Once the build process happens, it is going to look into the webdo config, look into the transformation of the XML for the staging environment, and then transform the configuration values to that one, and then spit the configuration. Imagine that you want to add another deployment. You'll have to add another transformation, and it's going to be part of the process. You cannot just build one package and then say, deploy it the way you like. With ASP.NET 5, because of these multiple sources of configurations, you can do that. You don't have to know about your configurations from the beginning. Let's have a look. Open the config demo. All right, this is my configuration demo. The first thing I want to bring your attention to is there's no webdo config. We have something called config.json. It's just a JSON file in which you defined key value pairs of your configurations. And don't worry, it's not one level of hierarchy. It can support multiple hierarchies. You can go so deep, you can construct objects of these configurations. But for our simple scenario, we're going to have a local, a simple config key, my config key, simplest name. Yeah, who attended Greg Law's session before this? What was the most difficult thing that developers saw? Naming things. So I always saw my config key. So in the config.json, this is my configuration. In my startup class, I defined something called configuration builder. This is part of the ASP.NET 5. I create it. I set up. This line is not needed anymore in the new versions of the ASP.NET 5. But in this, at least in beta 8, you set the base path of your application from the application environment, and then you say for the configuration builder, I want the config.json to be the first source of my key values. And then look into environment variables. Whatever value that matches the keys in my environment variables, overwrite it. I want the environment variables to be more important than the config.json. If I run this application, and of course I'm going to build my configuration. Here, I have a property for the configuration through which I can access my configuration. So if I say, for example, if I show you here, I can access the configuration from the builder, the property I have created, and then I'm going to access the key and put it on the response. Who can notice something nice here? Yes, nice. Nice catch. In C# 6, you can put a dollar sign before the string, and then instead of doing concatenations or the string.format, string curly braces, 0, close the curly brace, and then instead of doing this and then adding and in placing these values in the string, now you can inline it, dollar sign, and then instantly you have access to IntelliSense in your string. So if I run this fellow here, you can see that the value of my config is local value. All right. For the sake of this demo, I created a website that is timed out. All right. All right, it's here. If I open my friend, this guy. Site is my friend. You can see that this is the basic template that comes with Azure websites. If you go to the Azure portal, create an Azure web app, this is what you're going to get. I'm going to publish my fellow here to this website. Publish. Here it is. So I'm going to profile, connection, remove. Maximum apps. Re-enter credentials. Who does not know two-factor authentication? Okay, everybody knows. Who does not implement or have two-factor authentication? Bad. You should, really. I've recently started looking into all the services I have and start using two-factor authentication, especially if Troy Hunt is in the area. You should do this. So I'm going to put my code here. It's thinking.
right? Come on. You good? Yeah, maybe I should do this. Yep, that's it. Correct. And where is my friend? Ignite Imad. Okay. And next. Everything's fine. This is one of the nice things. You can see that I'm targeting the framework, the new framework, which is going to be shipped by. Like, this is crazy, guys. Minute 5. Hopefully the connection is going to be fast. If I just make sure that I prepare things properly and I open the tab, once this finish, who can guess what the value will be if I refresh my website? If it finishes today. So, finished. Again, refresh. And local value, right? Because this was the value that we had in the config.json. But if I go to my portal again, this is what happens when you have presentation, you have too many tabs. If I go to my portal again and then go to configure, and then go to where is it? Application settings. Here we go. App settings. In the new portal, by the way, you can, it's properly named application environment. So environment variables. So I'm going to use the key, my config key. Paste here, and the value is this is Azure. Hit save. Done. Now, if I refresh my friend, it's thinking. Local value should change to this is Azure. So it's very distinct. The configuration is not part of the code. And I'm not sure if you heard the most expensive bug on the internet. This was a blog post by someone. It's a guy who was, for some reason, he has a GitHub repository. He has private one and public one. And by mistake, he had his AWS secret in his code. He meant to push to the private repository, but then he pushed it to the public. You would assume, like, who's looking into this public repo, right? Well, hackers are really good. They have crawlers. They have been crawling the public repos looking for such a mistake. He ended up paying $8,000 bill because his secret sneaked out to the public repo and the hackers got it and they used his resources to spam others. So in this case, you don't have to go through this. So, we talked about caching, we talked about configurability, caching response to scalability, configurability for configurability. For the time, limit of time, I haven't prepared demos for the other two, so I'm going to touch briefly on them. Resources. We said that in the cloud, we are paying for our resources. And the ASP.NET team took this into consideration from day one. First of all, it's modular. And we explained about Owen. I'm not going to explain again. It's just you have all the middlewares you need, and that's it. No more. If you don't want sessions, there's no paying cost for running the request into a pipeline that handles sessions. Authentication, the same. Like we said, caching, the same. Also, it's performant. With the new ASP.NET 5, the guys put so much concentration on making it performant. They have, maybe I can switch to show you something here. Good. If you go to GitHub, ASP.NET, benchmarks, and it's all in the open. This is one of the most beautiful things. You can see all the benchmarks they have been running and testing the performance of their new ASP.NET 5 performance. And they have all different environments. And this even changed from the last time I've seen it. You can see all the different servers and the different implementations. It's beautiful. They say at some point they said it's competing with Node.js and even faster. The last thing is for us is hosting. Hosting matches the part when we said about diversity. In ASP.NET 5, it's cross-platform. With the .NET Core, if you run your ASP.NET 5 in a way that can run on .NET Core and you don't have dependencies on things that are not supported, your ASP.NET 5 can run on Linux, you can run on Mac OS X, and you can run, like, this is just a beautiful thing. It's cross-platform and you have so much options. Also, I should have said server independent, not host independent. You can have your IIS to serve ASP.NET 5. If you don't like IIS for some reason or you want to have other options, you can. The hosting model of ASP.NET 5 is not bound to IIS, as long as there's the bridge between the server and the hosting. There's also a new server called Kestrel. It's built over libuv. And the guys in the ASP.NET 5 are behind this server as well. And the last thing and the most interesting part is you can run the .NET framework side by side. The versions of the .NET framework, they can run side by side. And this is really huge. In one of the clients I have worked with, we were running on the .NET framework 4.5. And this application used a lot of the large object heap. There was so much consumption of big XMLs and big images. And one of the things that is specific to the large object heap is it cannot be compressed. It's not like the small object heap. It's not like the heap. It's not the fragmentation can happen and then you'll be in a problem. So there's no compaction. But in 4.5.2, the .NET framework team introduced a command line, an API that you can force or you can do the memory compaction. So they had this big application with this problem, and the solution was, or the mitigation for this problem was very simple. Just call this line. But then, it depends on 4.5.2. We spent almost 2 months looking into if we can deploy the new version on the client's servers. Of course, it went all the through bureaucracy and stuff, but the whole concept, if you can run version next to another version, you don't have a problem at all. Keep the previous applications running on the version that they have been running, and then another one for the new one. So we had scalability, configurability, resources, and diversity, and now we have caching, configuration, hosting, and performance. All of these things come together and make the ASP.NET 5 cloud ready. I think this is everything I have. Before we start the questions, I just wanted to remind you to put a review. And you know that we start the numbers from 4, 5, 6, 7. So, yeah, just I think there's nice gifts if you fill your form, and open for questions if you have any. Yes. With ASP.NET 5, you can bring your own IOC container. The only thing that you have to build an abstraction over, do an implementation for the abstractions that they have provided in the previous or the native IOC. The AutoFac team already done this with the help of the ASP.NET team, so you don't have to worry about this. If you want to use AutoFac, there is a simple couple of lines that you can put in your configure services in the startup class, and you can just run with AutoFac. Is it worth doing? In ASP.NET 5, it's in beta 8. The most interesting part about ASP.NET 5 is it depends on different projects. And you can see if you go to GitHub/ASP.NET, you can see that there's so many repositories of sessions and stuff, and these are not being delivered on the same pace. So I think it still needs some time to be ready for production, but I think you can put your hands on it and do beautiful stuff in this time.
You created a singleton object, right?
Yeah, yes.
So